Luke Perkins was a tall man, completely bald, with a huge mustache that hung over his upper lip like the cowcatcher on a steam engine. He cut a fat steer out of the herd, and with the help of Frank and George, butchered it for a reunion barbecue. The women busied themselves making yeast bread and pies, while the men and cowboys not riding herd gathered as much deadfall wood as they could drag up. The soft cottonwood and willow burned fast, so they would need a lot. By sunset, the beef sizzled and smoked over a huge bed of coals. The rest of the herd was strung out for nearly a mile, mooing and milling, content to graze on the narrow strip of green that lined the bank. There was hardly a breath of wind, and with the sun down, it cooled off just enough to make fire and close companionship feel warm and welcome. Perkins leaned back against his upturned saddle, the fleece underlining forming a backrest, his blanket a padded seat over the rocks, a cowboy easy chair.
I miss a good old mesquite fire for barbecue, don't you, Frankie? I've grown a little particular about my beef. Ain't nothing like a hardwood for barbecue.
The rich aroma of bread, roasting meat, and baking sweets filled the air in the little riverside glade. At the edge of the clearing, three Mexican cowboys, adopted by Luke in their then early teens, huddled around a shovel blade over a bed of coals away from the main fire.
What are they cooking over there? It smells wonderful.
Tripas.
What's tripas?
Tripe, Mrs. Carpenter. They're cooking the guts. Mexicans love the stuff. Really ain't so bad once you work it around in your mouth some and get it chewed up and swallowed.
Ooh, personally, I'd rather eat the shovel. Eating a gut? Ooh, sounds disgusting.
I know people who eat snakes. Now that's what I call disgusting.
Luke cast his eyes back and forth on the ground around his saddle to check for the slithering reptiles, just to be on the safe side.
When was the last time you went home to Texas, Frankie?
I drifted through Amarillo a few months ago, but I haven't been home in a coon's age. It'd just bring trouble to my friends if I went back.
You're getting old, Frank. Most of the men back home who wanted to kill you are either already dead or gumming their food by now.
What about Jim Taggart? He and I don't exactly see eye to eye since I killed his brother back before the war.
That big buck-toothed Irishman who was sweet on Julie Sweeney killed him last winter.
Looks like you're doing pretty well for yourself, Luke.
The double diamond turns a profit, if that's what you mean. But since Lisa passed on, my heart's not in it anymore. I'm happier out here on the trail than I am back at the ranch. We all got our ghosts on us.
Amen to that. It must be a heavy burden, being trail boss, guide, father, confessor, and nursemaid to all these adopted children of yours.
Yeah, well, there are benefits to starting them young. If I raise them, I know I can count on them in a pinch. I wouldn't give you a dab of horse crap for the best hand Vic Sutton has. Those boys ride for the money. My boys are family. They ride for the brand. You wouldn't catch any of my men working for Swan or the likes of him. $10,000 or no. Wouldn't matter if it was $100,000. I'll not have a man I can't trust. I find someone like that in the ranks and he can draw his wages and scoot.
You need to be a daddy. You make a good one for a fact.
Here, Mr. Perkins.
To everyone's amazement, Carolyn Brandon, her normally disheveled hair tied back in a green satin bow, brought a huge piece of pie, a linen napkin, and a fresh mug of coffee to Luke. He smiled up at her and took the dessert. He patted the saddle pad on the ground next to him.
Take a load off those pretty little feet, darling. There's enough of this here for the both of us.
Carolyn knelt down beside him.
I'd like that very much, Mr. Perkins.
They were the first words she'd spoken in weeks.
Well now, aren't you just the prettiest little thing this side of Texas or heaven? Call me Luke.
Frank watched as his friend chatted with the heartsick woman, complimenting her hair and her dress. Luke Perkins had a way with people, particularly the fairer sex. Everyone ate their fill, and then at Selena's insistence, ate some more. Surrounded by a virtual army of Luke's cowboys, Frank felt like he could relax a notch for the first time in recent memory. The fire died down to embers, blown to life now and again by each breath of passing breeze along the river bottom. Cowboys began to drift back to the herd to relieve their compadres riding Night Owl. Frank was intensely aware of the warmth of Dixie's body. She sat right next to him, her hip pressing against his leg, her hand in his, resting on the bend of her knee. A whippoorwill cried in the cottonwoods down by the river.
That's odd. You don't hear those birds too often this far out.
Sounds so lonesome. Makes me feel like crying. The girls are already in bed.
I reckon it's time to turn in.
Frank?
I'm still here, darling. You'd fall on your head if I moved.
Frank Morgan, I am a full-grown woman, in case you haven't noticed. Well, I'm going to be bold and say this straight out before I change my mind. I don't want to sleep alone tonight.
Dixie's chest heaved, and she bit her bottom lip. The speech given, a look of panic began to cross her face, and she opened her mouth to speak again. Frank smiled and put a finger to her lips.
I don't either. What do you say we go down by the river and find that whippoorwill?
All the tension seemed to leave Dixie's body. She disappeared to the wagon and returned a short time later with some blankets and a pillow. She held it up in front of her.
I could only find the one.
I don't reckon I'll be needing any pillow. I'll have you.
Frank took Dixie's hand, and they slipped quietly into the night. Two hours later, Dixie Carpenter, recent widow and 36-year-old mother of two girls, lay next to a sleeping Frank Morgan and smiled up into the white curtain of stars that draped across the night sky. 2 months ago, she would have been perfectly content to stay cooped up in her cozy little home near Terre Haute, Indiana, with her grumpy husband, growing children, and basically dull existence. Before she left on this trip, Dixie had never even slept outdoors. The lumpy, toe-filled tick in the wagon had been almost unbearable at first compared to her feather bed at home. As time went on, though, she'd grown somewhat used to the hard conditions of the trail, and except for the sleeping arrangements, even flourished. Now, lying on top of a maze of tree roots that crisscrossed under her blanket and bit into her bare back like a rope bed without the mattress, she found she was as comfortable as she had ever been in her life. Frank slept quietly beside her, his strong chest rising and falling with each breath. Her head was cradled on his shoulder, his sure arm wrapped around her, holding her as if he was afraid she might escape if he let her go. He didn't need to worry about that. Even surrounded by the warm comfort of his body, Dixie felt her heart flutter inside her. She'd really done it now. She hoped Frank Morgan was half the man she judged him to be. If he left her now, she didn't know what she'd do. The roots finally began to get to her spine, and she rolled a little to change positions. Frank clutched at her in his sleep and then relaxed.
Dixie.
He didn't stir again. On her side now, her face against his neck, his mouth breathing softly in her ear, she whispered back to him.
I love you, Frank Morgan.
She held her breath to see if he would answer. He'd said it before, in the heat of the moment, but she'd supposed lots of men said it during such amorous circumstances. He hugged her to him.
Me too.
Dixie froze, waiting to see if he would say more. When he began to snore softly, his lips brushing against her ear, she relaxed. She didn't want to sleep anymore. She just wanted to lay in the arms of this wonderful man and plan. Plan for everything the future might hold. For the first time in weeks, Dixie Carpenter, recent widow and 36-year-old mother of two, knew she could handle it. Two hours before dawn, Frank squatted by the chuck wagon at the Double Diamond camp. Up and down the river, the cattle were beginning to stir. A few mama cows that had snuck into the herd of steers at the start of the trip lowed for their babies, telling them it was time to eat. The remuda of horses stood on a long picket line, stomping and snorting as they waited for the wrangler to give them their morning ration of oats. A column of bleary-eyed cowboys, Chance and Jasper in the lead, queued up for bacon, biscuits, and coffee.
I guess I've tasted worse.
Where? From the back end of a buffalo? I'd love to have a plate of ham and eggs right now. Some fluffy buttermilk biscuits as big as a cat's head, all smothered in real red-eye gravy.
I seem to recall you said you were happier out here on the trail.
I was. Then you had to go and introduce me to that Carolyn Brandon. She's got me thinking about soft beds and good meals. Truth is, Frank, I reckon I'm getting as old as you. That Carolyn, well, she's real sweet, and I've been awful lonely since Lisa passed.
I think you'd be good for each other.
Good, because she's decided to come back to Texas with me after I get this herd to the railhead.
Good for you and good for Carolyn.
There's even more to it than that. Berta and Bee have decided to come with us, too. They're right smitten with Jasper and Chance, and the feeling appears to be mutual. In a few years, well, who knows how it'll work out.
You'd adopt the whole lot of them if you could.
How about that Dixie Carpenter? Her body'd have to be blind as a mole not to see you two got a little thing going on.
Yeah, I reckon we got something going on.
Well then, when you two get hitched, you can come home and settle down. Stop all this drifting.
No one said anything about marriage yet, partner. It hasn't even come up.
Oh, boy, you don't think so? Sure it's come up. A woman Dixie's age don't look at your eyes like that because she wants you to take her to the church social. And she sure as shooting don't walk off with you into the dark. Yeah, we seen the two of you. So did George and Paula while we were all slipping off to find our own little slices of the night. Take it from me. A single woman brings you a piece of pie and sits by you around a campfire, and she's dreaming of tying the eternal knot.
So you and Carolyn already talked about getting married?
Yep. Late last night. We'll get hitched first chance we get. To be such a quick hand with a gun, you're a little slow on the uptake, boyo. Now let's get serious for a minute, okay?
Sure.
You got a considerable number of men after you.
I do. It's been that way for some time. This is not a new situation.
Well, you got a woman to think about now. Now, I ain't saying you should run scared or any such thing. I'm just suggesting you think about coming home. Quit wandering around and get yourself shot at.
You think that if I came home, no one would try and prod me?
I don't know, Frankie. But for the most part, at least, if you came back to Texas, you'd be among friends. Dixie could have a home. You know enough about women to know they got a need to put down roots.
Home to Texas. That's something to consider.
Don't worry about drinking the coffee. It'd probably kill the grass, but go ahead and pour it out. I got a herd to move.
We ever want to get to Pueblo, we best get moving.
By the time Frank made it back to the wagons, Dixie was up and tending to a large Dutch oven full of biscuits. A tall, blue-speckled coffee pot sat at the edge of the fire. He poured himself a cup and wondered how she could look so beautiful on so little sleep.
I hope this is some of your famous brew. I can't begin to tell you how bad that cow camp coffee was. I heard of folks throwing in some eggshell to settle the grounds. I believe they threw in the whole egg.
Did you eat?
I had a piece of biscuit, to be polite. At least I think it was a biscuit. It was dark. It might have been eating a hunk of firewood. Or a cow patty.
Dixie fed him a full course breakfast and gave him a peck on the cheek for dessert. After he ate, Frank hitched the mules. As brave a man as he was, with what he intended to do, he needed to hitch up his courage as well. Once the teams were well in harness, he called Dixie and the girls over to where he stood. He folded his arms in front of him and stared at them. For all his planning, he didn't know how to begin. Just looking at Dixie's bright and expecting face took all the starch out of him.
What's wrong, Frank? You look like you just swallowed a bug.
Be still a minute. I have something I need to tell you, and it's eating a hole in me. Keep it inside. It's important. All right. Here's the way things are going to be. I want you girls to listen and listen good. First, you're both going to get a good education. There's some top-notch universities back east, and I expect your mother to be happy for you to attend any one of them once you're old enough. I'll pay for it, so that shouldn't be a problem. I'll not have any stepdaughters of mine going through life as uneducated women with school becoming so important in this day and age. Your mother wants to go to Denver, so we're going to go on up there and be married. After we're married, if she's willing, we'll travel down to Texas for a while. If we like it, we'll stay. If not, have a nice spread in New Mexico. It's remote, but it'll do. Now, I've said my piece.
Are we supposed to call you Daddy or Mr. Morgan?
Frank will do just fine.
Will you really pay for our schooling and board and everything back east? I always wanted to be a doctor.
I said I would, and I meant it. All of it. Now you girls run on. Me and your mama have a thing or two to sort out amongst ourselves.
Come on!
After the girls were gone, Dixie stood staring at Frank, a silly grin decorating the corners of her mouth.
Frank Morgan, that was the strangest way to propose I ever heard of.
I believe in getting straight to the point. Does my plan meet with your approval?
Well, what do you think?
I think we need to hurry and get married so you can make an honest man out of me.
Ephraim Swine sat in his folding wooden chair and watched the sparks from the huge cedar fire spiral upward and disappear into the blackness above him. The drovers they'd robbed the night before, near the little speck on the map where Colorado, Kansas, and Nebraska all came together, had left him richer by thousands, but he still felt hollow knowing Frank Morgan was alive and free to roam the country after the way he'd mucked everything up.
Meddling bastard.
It wasn't so much the loss of money, though he had stood to gain a considerable amount from the transaction with the Mexicans. There was always more money to steal from this puny settler or that hapless miner who struck it rich just long enough to brag about all his gold to the wrong people. No, there was money aplenty to be had in any number of ways. Swan hated to be beaten. He despised the fact that Morgan had been able to kill so many of his men, that he'd been able to keep the women safe all by himself when Swan, with his virtual army, hadn't been able to get them back. Gamble, who'd been touted as the best hired gun around, hadn't even come close to besting the stupid drifter. In a few days, the wagons would be well into civilization, and it would be all the more difficult to get at them. He knew the families had put their entire life savings somewhere in those wagons. He'd talked the ignorant men into doing just that. But the closer they got to towns and banks, the more likely each of the women was to make a deposit and put the money where he couldn't get to it. Swan looked deep into the glowing coals of the fire. He realized it wasn't the money he was after at all. He just wanted Frank Morgan dead. If the gunfighter was too fast or just too damned lucky to be killed, then so be it. Swan lifted his head and howled at the stars like a crazy wolf. The men closest to him around the fire jumped at the horrific sound.
I've worked it all out, boys. We've been going about this all the wrong way. I should have kept after that train from the very beginning. Gather around, and let me tell you what we're going to do.
Swan bent to pitch more wood on the fire, and it rose up in a tall pyre in front of him, bathing him in orange light and warming his face as he spoke. He knew his huge shadow danced in the juniper and pinions behind him, and he saw the awe in the eyes of his men. He stared hard at all the men around him. These men knew him. They'd all seen what he was capable of doing when he was upset.
The wagon train with the soon-to-be-dead Frank Morgan and all his women will be pulling into Pueblo soon. I say we head that direction, and when opportunity rears its head, we whack it off. I've been offering $10,000 to the man who kills Frank Morgan. I'll say this once, so listen to me good. I'm upping my offer to double. That's $20,000 to the man who kills the worthless puke. If you can get to him before I do. But any man who wants the money better light a shuck and hurry, because tomorrow I'm heading for Pueblo. And when I get there, I aim to kill Frank Morgan myself, or die trying.
As slow as the wagons were, they still moved faster than the ambling Double Diamond herd. Perkins wanted the cattle to be as fat as possible when they got to the market, so he let them laze along and didn't rush them. Frank had a 3-day lead by the time the wagons rolled into the outskirts of Pueblo. They pulled to a stop next to a line of scrubby cedars by the dilapidated remnants of an old log and stone structure. The closer they got to the town, the more animated Otis Chapman became. Out of earshot of all the others, He asked Frank a number of questions about the surrounding country, particularly the area to the north, toward the Big Gorge.
You ever hear of a place called Cripple Creek?
Sure. Canyon City is about 40 miles that way. The place you're looking for is a bit north of Canyon City. Your secret's safe with me. I never had the lust for gold.
I didn't fool you much, did I?
I've seen people with gold fever before, Otis. It's what brought all these women out here with their husbands in the first place. Some folks strike it rich, others don't. No matter how you look at it, from what I've seen, it's mighty hard work for what you get back.
Now, I suppose I'm after the adventure more than the gold.
Good to hear. A search for gold generally amounts to a fool's errand. But if you've got your heart set on it, and that kind of attitude, I say Godspeed. When are you pulling out?
As soon as we can provision up. Selena and I are anxious to get up there and stake a small claim.
Make certain you get enough to last the winter. It's been a pleasure knowing you and your family, Mr. Chapman.
The pleasure was all ours. I think we'll meet again one day.
Hope so.
Not one for prolonged goodbyes, Frank tipped his hat to Selena and the boys. He found Dixie at her wagon, taking stock of what they might need to buy in town.
Chapmans are leaving us. Where are the girls?
Gone in with everyone else. They promised to stay with Betty and keep out of trouble.
How long ago did they leave?
10-15 minutes. George and Paula said they'd come back about 3 and stay with the stock while we go in. Look at these peppers, Frank. A sweet old Mexican woman in a red scarf came out and sold them to me, along with some fresh tortillas. I thought we could have some chili tonight. What do you think of that?
Sounds good. Well, that Senora, did she have her head?
What? What's that supposed to mean? Of course she had her head.
You don't know the story of old Pueblo and the Christmas massacre?
No.
Well, on Christmas Day back in 54, a bunch of Ute Indians came up to the old fort that used to stand pretty near where we are right now and asked if they could come inside and work out a peace treaty. The way I heard it, the poor Mexican folks inside were well into a good drunk from all their festivities, so they let the thieving buggers in. The Utes killed all but a woman and a couple of kids right here in the fort.
That's awful, right here where we are?
Or thereabouts. Legend has it that the Utes cut the heads off all the women. For years, trappers and traders coming through this area have told stories of seeing headless women walking around Pueblo and wailing in the dark.
Headless?
That's what the legend says.
Do you think it's true?
Well, the massacre happened. That's a fact.
Well, what about the ghost part? Do you think the ghosts of these poor headless women still haunt this place?
No. But it makes for a good story to make your woman bunch up tight and close-like.
You're awful, Frank Morgan.
I reckon I do have a bit of a mean streak. Just the same, I think it'd be better if you stayed right next to me.
Well, I wouldn't have it any other way. Let's get married here, Frank. Let's not wait any longer. It doesn't have to be anything big, but we could do it before Otis and Selena leave. How about it, Frank? Are you still in the mood to marry this old woman?
I don't know which should scare you more, Dixie, darling. Headless Mexican ghosts or marrying a rough old cob like me.
I'm sure they got a justice of the peace or a minister or someone who could do it proper.
All right. We deserve some happiness, too, don't we?
Yes. We do.
I'll go into town, get the license, and pay the fees. You tell the girls to drag out their Sunday best, because you're gonna have a wedding tomorrow.
Tonight, Frank? Who knows what the world will be like tomorrow? Let's do it tonight. Then, later, we won't have to go sneaking off into the bushes.
Frank kissed this stubborn, beautiful woman and grabbed her by both shoulders, staring at her face.
Tonight it is, then. Soon to be Mrs. Frank Morgan.
Promise. No matter what.
You have my word on it, darling.
Dixie stayed with the wagons while Frank saddled Stormy and loped into town. There was a warm breeze in his face, and he felt a little dizzy as he slowed his horse to an easy trot adjacent to the little pink adobe cobbler shop at the edge of town. He looked down at Wolf, who trotted beside them, his tongue lolling out, black lips pulled back as though he was smiling.
You're doing the right thing, boy.
Wolf whined, keeping pace with the jigging Appaloosa, his ears perked up at the direct attention.
You're no help at all.
Frank had the marriage license in hand an hour later. He still needed Dixie's signature, but the Justice of the Peace assured him that this could be taken care of just before the ceremony, especially for the famous Frank Morgan. He stepped out onto the baked clay road, returned the hat to his head, and drew in a deep lungful of high desert air, one of his last breaths of air as a free and single man. There was something to be said for drifting. He thought of Dixie, her green eyes and soft face. There was something to be said for settling down as well. George Carlyle reined up in front of the Justice of the Peace's office and dismounted in a hurry. He looked up the street behind him, then at Frank.
What's the matter, George? You look a little green around the gills. You decide to get married today, too?
You need to watch yourself, Morgan. I've been in town 2 hours and already run into someone who wants to kill you.
One of Swan's men?
Likely. A tow-headed giant they call Dakota Bob.
George nodded back down the street toward a false-fronted saloon called La Paloma Blanca, the White Dove.
From what people tell me, he's been sitting in there playing cards and spewing on all day about what he intends to do to you and your wagon train of women.
I see. I don't know why I thought this town would be any different. Until I address this problem with Swan, there'll be no rest from these two-bit gunmen out to make their fortune.
What do you want to do, Frank?
George reached under the edge of his jacket and touched the bird's head grip of his pistol.
You know I'll back your play.
I know it, and I appreciate it. But there's no sense in you taking the chance of getting yourself hurt. Paula would never forgive me.
And Dixie would never forgive me. Forget it, Frank. This is not about my job now. You're my friend.
You could help me the most by going back to the wagons and checking on my wife-to-be. I'll keep my head in the fight better if I know she's being taken care of.
All right. But I don't like it. Well, why don't we go get Dixie settled with Otis and Selena? Then we can both go take care of this.
The gunfighter swung into his saddle. He patted the folded papers in his vest pocket.
No, I reckon I better go on and see to this Dakota Bob now, before he finishes his card game and comes to bleed all over Dixie's wedding.
Frank touched the brim of his hat, nodded, and spun his horse onto its haunches to lope up the street toward the Paloma Saloon. Frank knew two things. If something needed to be done, it was better to get to it right away. And it was generally better if he tended to it by himself. Flies darted and buzzed around the entrance to La Paloma Blanca as if even they knew better than to go inside. Frank looped Stormy's reins over a rough cedar rail in front, next to a gaunt bay with a sagging lower lip.
Wolf, you stay here and guard Stormy.
Inside, the bar was busy for an early afternoon. It was 2 o'clock, siesta time, and those that couldn't sleep chose to come and spend their afternoon rest in the smoke-filled air of the greasy establishment. The buzz of several card games hummed under a pall of smoke in the back of the dim room. Two Mexican hostesses slouched at the bar, sipping clay cups of mezcal. Both looked well past their prime. One was at least as old as Frank. The other, though younger, filled her threadbare peasant dress to the point of bursting. Chubby, round cheeks almost hid her tired eyes. Both smiled dutifully at Frank, but neither seemed to have the energy to get up and speak to him. The bartender was a short, dark man with a stained apron and yellowed shirt. He had a curled black mustache and wore his hair slicked straight back.
Can I help you, senor?
Beer?
Frank nodded to the older of the two women, who stared at him as if he were a juicy steak.
I am sorry, but we have no beer. The supplies have yet to be delivered from Denver. I can offer you some of the best tequila this side of the Mexican border.
No, thanks. Gives me a whomping headache. You got any coffee?
Of course, senor. I have sugar as well, if you wish. Except for beer. We have anything you might desire after a long day's journey under the sun.
The bartender dipped his head toward the two women at the end of the bar. Frank suppressed a shudder and thought of sweet Dixie back at the wagons.
Black coffee will suit me just fine, thank you.
It was easy enough to tell which of the card players was Dakota Bob. The hulking man sat at a table of dust-covered drovers, chewing on a green cigar as big around as a small shrub. He was winning, and the drovers were too afraid of him to get up and leave. Bob took a match out of his vest pocket and lit it on the end of a yellow thumbnail. He touched the flame to the gray ash of his cigar and puffed it back to life. He was clean enough, but his clothes looked homespun and poor. His long blonde hair was pulled back into a tight braid, tied off at the end with a leather string and a brown eagle feather. Frank guessed him to be in his late 30s.
Hurry up and bet, boys. I got me a date with Frank Morgan as soon as I win all your hard-earned cash.
Frank leaned against the bar and drank his coffee, watching the blowhard.
Yes, sir, boys. After I put a bullet in Morgan's gizzard, then I'll show them women what a real man is like. It'll take most of them just to satisfy a man like me.
And what kind of a man is that?
Did I hear a little groundhog chirping over there?
Nope, just me. I was just wondering what kind of a man it was who'd have to go around blabbing about killing somebody they never met and molesting a bunch of defenseless women.
What are you trying to say, mister?
Oh, nothing really. Name's Frank Morgan. I was just wondering why you don't just come and find me instead of sitting around in here all day talking about it. Then it hit me. I figured you just need the time to work up the courage to look me in the eye.
You cocksure uppity son of a bitch. It's gonna be a pleasure to skin your sorry hide.
The drovers scattered to the edges of the room, leaving what money they had on the table. They didn't want to be in the line of fire, but they didn't want to miss the show either.
Well, I'm here, Bob. You go ahead and do what you think you need to, because I got things to do.
Dakota Bob's hand dropped to his gun. Morgan stood, his peacemaker smoking in his hand. The other gunman swayed, staring into space. He'd drawn his pistol and cocked it, but hadn't had time to fire. He grabbed at the edge of the table, flipping it as he fell, and scattering money and cards across the dusty floor. The outlaw slumped, both legs splayed out in front of him. He raised his gun. A look of surprise crossed his face. The cocked revolver slipped from his grasp and hit the floor beside him. Frank ducked instinctively.
You bastard! I can't feel my legs!
Frank kicked the gun away and squatted next to the dying man, a growing pool of blood soaked into the dirt floor under him.
Afraid I shot your spine out, Bob. Wish I could have killed you cleaner. Tell me who sent you.
You mean son of a bitch named Ephraim Swan. Meaner than me by a long shot. Oh, don't just leave me here. I can't move. Show some mercy for pity's sake.
Like you would have showed those women.
Frank left the hired gun to face his death alone on the dirty floor. He reloaded and walked out of the dim bar, slipping the Colt back into his holster. As long as Ephraim Swan was still alive, he would have trouble of his own. The Pueblo Justice of the Peace was a bushy-haired old gent who seemed disappointed Dixie was marrying Frank instead of him.
You sure you want to go through with this, little lady? Someone as pretty as you is bound to do a whole bunch better if you just wait a dab.
Dixie blushed at the compliment and looked at Frank, who stood next to her. She wore her best green linen dress and a white ribbon in her hair. The girls had picked her a shock of wildflowers, and she held the bouquet in her hand.
No, I've made my choice, and I believe I'll stick to it.
Take a good look at him now before we do this. That mean look in his eye, that cruel grin. You still got time to change your mind, remember. It's Frank Morgan, the notorious gunman and killer.
Judge, you might do well to follow your own advice and remember who I am. It's not too late for me to get a priest. After he's done with your last rites, he can finish up with the wedding.
The old judge set his jaw and hurried through the ceremony. When he finished, he shook his head in sorrow as he looked at Dixie.
I do believe you broke that man's heart. He fell in love with you as soon as we walked in the door.
Betty and Paula herded everyone back to the wagons, where they'd laid a sumptuous meal of lamb, tortillas, and roast vegetables. It was getting dark, and the cook fires cast shadows among the canvas wagon tops. A cool breeze blew. Frank had hired a young guitarist, and everyone danced late into the night. Dixie whispered to Frank as they swayed to a slow Spanish waltz.
The girls are going to stay with Betty tonight.
I don't care if they stay in the wagon.
Frank, it's our wedding night.
I don't care if they stay in the wagon, because I got us a room at the hotel in town. A woman like you shouldn't have to spend her honeymoon on the trail.
Oh, you spoil me.
That lecherous old judge was right about one thing. It's a hard enough life you've chosen, just living with the likes of me. I reckon you deserve to be spoiled a little.
The Chapmans pulled out for Cripple Creek before noon the next day. Frank could tell Otis was antsy to get moving, and had only stayed around for the wedding because Selena had made him. Luke Perkins arrived late that evening, 2 hours ahead of his herd, and walked straight into the arms of Carolyn Brandon. Now that he was back, she stuck to him like glue, even going with him to sell the cattle. She even refused to ride a separate horse, but rode behind him, clutching the cowboy around the waist as if he might fly away if she let go of him. If Luke minded the attention, it didn't show on his face. His great bushy mustache was turned up in a constant grin from the moment he rode into town. That evening, Luke and Carolyn joined Frank and Dixie for coffee.
What are you going to do now?
We're not certain yet.
We're heading right back for Texas. Betty says she's coming too. Says there's nothing for her here, so she might as well. Luke says he knows a widower in Lampasas who she might get along with real good.
You remember Dobb Parker, don't you, Frankie? His wife died a year ago. I think he and Betty could use someone to talk to, don't you?
I'll tell you what I think, Lucas Perkins. I think you're stealing all my women. One minute I'm surrounded by them. Next minute they've all headed off to Texas with you.
Well, why don't you just come with us then? There's safety in numbers. You'd be better off with us.
What about it, Dixie? We got nothing but ourselves pulling us north. If you still want to see Denver, well, I'm game. If you'd care to try our hand in Texas, well, I'm up for that too.
George and Paula came up from their evening stroll and announced they had decided to leave the next morning for New York. The little group talked and planned late into the evening, plotting out their futures. Frank and Dixie decided that they would let the girls go with the rest of the group while they got what they could for the wagons and belongings. They would honeymoon in Pueblo and follow by train about a week later. The decision made, Frank felt lighter. They got a room in Pueblo for a week, and the two began to set about selling the wagons. Everything went smoothly until the third day. Vic Sutton rode into town just after noon. He found Frank at the livery, working out a deal to sell all the mules. The rancher drove the stable owner away with a withering stare.
I don't like you much, Morgan. But I don't like what's about to happen even more.
What are you talking about?
Swan and a band of his gang are on their way. He says if he can't get anyone good enough to kill you and your woman, he'll just have to come and do it himself.
His funeral?
No. It don't matter how fast you are if he shoots you in the back. He don't intend to face you in the street. There ain't a fair bone in that sorry bastard's body.
When?
I talked to him 2 days ago and started straight away to warn you. I reckon I got a day on him. Listen, I don't give a hoot in hell if he guns you down in a fair fight. But I won't have him kill you like a dog in the street. If I was you, I'd get on the next train out of town.
I'm much obliged to you, considering how you feel.
Just take your woman and get while the getting's good.
With that, the rancher mounted his horse and loped away. The next train came through at 8 the next morning. Frank had never been the type to run from a fight, but he had Dixie to think about now. He sold what he could, deposited the money in the bank, and drew most of it back out in the form of a cashier's check. Dixie packed her best dresses in a leather valise, while Frank arranged with a man at the depot to have Stormy berthed in a boxcar with Wolf. At 8:30, the train hissed away from the Pueblo station, with Mr. and Mrs. Frank Morgan safely on board. Dixie breathed a sigh of relief as they picked up speed, moving north to the line that would eventually take them east.
I have to admit, I was beginning to get scared there for a while.
I'm glad to be out of there. We're going in the wrong direction, but we'll work our way back south when we get the chance. My darling, I don't know what you had planned a few months ago. To tell you the truth, I'm not sure what my own plans were. But no matter what happens from this day on, it's been a great adventure. We have sure enough seen the elephant.
What does seeing the elephant mean? I don't think I've ever seen an elephant in my life.
I reckon it means seeing it all through to your goal, even though you lose a good part of your kit. Making it through the storm, so to speak. I heard this story about a farmer back years ago who wanted to go to town and see one of those circus elephants. It seemed he wanted to see that damned elephant more than anything in the world. Well, he loaded up his cart with all his produce to sell in town so we'd have enough money to go to the circus. On the way there, he heard the elephant had escaped. He's awful upset about the news until he ran smack dab into the doggone thing right in the road. It scared his horse so much the cart overturned and spilled all his vegetables on the ground. The huge beast ended up trampling all the goods and killing the horse before the circus tenders could get it under control.
Oh, that poor farmer. What did he do then?
Well, darling, that's the point of the story. See, his friends offered their condolences and asked him how he'd felt about losing all his stuff. You know what he said?
No.
He said, losing everything didn't matter, for he had seen the elephant. And that was what he'd set out to do in the first place. I reckon I'm not much of a speech giver. My words generally get me in trouble, but now that I've had the pleasure of meeting and marrying you...
Don't tell me. Now you've had a chance to marry me and have a proper honeymoon, so you feel like you've seen an elephant.
No, darling. I was gonna say that now that I've got you, it really doesn't matter what happens. With you, I've had the main course. Everything else is just gravy.
You sure have got a funny way of saying things, Frank Morgan, but you sure make me feel good about myself. I've never been compared to an elephant or food before that I can remember, and been so happy about it.
Weary from constant worry, the two fell asleep to the motion of the gently swaying train.
Oh.
2 hours later, Frank was startled awake by the squeal of screeching brakes on metal wheels. He and Dixie were both thrown forward in their seats. An elderly miner looked up from behind his newspaper across the aisle.
The steamer on this old bucket leaks like a sieve. Sometimes I have to stop here to take on more water.
You want something to drink?
That would be nice. I could use a stretch. I'll go with you.
The conductor assured them they would be stopped for 20 minutes, so Frank and Dixie both got off to walk around. There was no more than a windmill and tower set up by the tracks in the red sandstone, and a small spigot at the base of the windmill drizzled water and created a small oasis in the red dirt. A green bush had sprung up from the abundant water, its branches covered in delicate yellow blossoms. Dixie cupped her hand to drink from the spigot and stopped to admire the flowers while she dried her hands.
How's that ring fitting you? Looked like it might be a little small.
Ring fits me fine. A cow kicked me in the knuckle when Faith was a baby, and it's been a little on the big side ever since.
I could have the ring stretched a little.
It's fine. Believe me, Frank, I never want to take it off.
A shiver suddenly ran up Frank's spine, the familiar feeling he got when something was wrong. Two boxcars back, Wolf confirmed his fears and broke into a barking, growling frenzy within his confinement. Frank drew his Colt and stepped in closer to Dixie, putting her between him and the windmill.
What's wrong, Frank?
A bullet slammed into Frank's back before he had time to answer. He staggered, then slumped into Dixie's arms. She screamed and wrapped her arms around him in an attempt to hold him up. He struggled to get to his feet. The peacemaker felt heavy in his hand.
Get down, Dixie.
Another shot tore into his shoulder, exiting through his right arm.
Quick! Everybody, get back on board! Hurry!
Frank heard the hiss of steam as the engine began to pull away, leaving them behind.
Move it! Get him!
Horses squealed, and rough men barked out orders. Frank was aware of Dixie's screams. Blackness began to envelop him. Another bullet hit him in the leg. He felt it strike like a powerful fist, felt it rip at his muscle and break bone. But he no longer felt any pain. He dropped the pistol and gazed up at his wife. Her beautiful green eyes were filled with terror,
and there was nothing he could do.
Can you hear me, mister?
A husky voice penetrated the fog of Frank's sleep. He tried to answer, pushed everything he had into forming the words, but they simply would not come.
So is I, Twitch. That's a good sign.
Frank felt as if he were floating, drifting. He'd often floated with his eyes shut on the river near his home as a boy.
Needs a doctor.
This voice belonged to a woman. Frank wondered if it might be his mother. She'd often warned him about the cottonmouth moccasins that lurked along the brushy shores of the Brazos River. She hated it when he drifted like this. It would be just like her to think he was snake-bit.
There ain't no doctor for 40 Mile. If this one is supposed to live, it's up to us and that Lord Almighty you talk to so much.
Oh, I'll pray over it while we drag him home. He looks like a fighter, this one does.
Well, bad as he's hit, he'd better be.
Frank tried to speak again, but it was no use. Warm currents tugged at his arms, and he felt like a stick slipping out of a swirling eddy to drift again, enveloped in the comfortable brown waters of the lazy Brazos River. Sam and Abby Bergen sat in their respective rockers and watched Frank sleep. During the day, Sam worked the mine, and except for when she took her husband's soup or a piece of mutton, Abby kept a vigil on her patient. She was by nature an extremely pious woman, extolling the virtues of the good book to everyone she met, and under normal circumstances, reading to Sam by candlelight while he pecked away with his hammer and chisel in their little mine. She kept cool towels on the injured man's forehead. He'd taken a nasty fever 2 days into his ordeal, and she worried about that more than the loss of blood, which had itself been substantial. She'd used sage and wild chamomile to make a poultice to draw out any poison left in the man's system, and checked the wounds daily for any red or abnormal puffiness. He didn't appear to have any lead still in him, so that was a blessing. Once she'd felt the herbs had done their job of drawing out anything unholy, she dabbed each wound with a bit of honey to stave off future infection. The mine had been showing some color lately, but the couple had little to offer except a straw mattress over a slung rope bed, clean bandages, mutton soup, and constant nourishment to the soul from Abby's reading of the Bible. She'd started off that morning reading from Habakkuk, a short book that, in her estimation, was too often overlooked or skimmed too quickly by the preachers back in civilization.
Oh, Lord, how long shall I cry, and thou wilt not hear? Even cry out of violence, and thou wilt not save?
Her patient stirred, struggling to speak. His eyes clenched in effort, his strong face distorted in pain. Abby leaned forward in her rocker and put a little check mark by her verse with a pencil stub so she would remember where she'd stopped, then slipped the thin leather bookmark between the pages of her Bible before she closed it. The cloth on the man's forehead was near steaming from his fever, and she dipped it in the basin beside his bed. After wringing the excess back in the bowl, she placed it back on his brow and touched him gently on top of his head.
There now, son. Don't try and talk just yet. You save yourself and fight this quietly. Me and Sam, we've done all we can. It's up to you and God now. You are going to have to fight if you want to live.
Abby sat back in her homemade rocking chair and found her mark in the Bible.
Let's see here. Where were we? Ah, here we are. Behold ye among the heathen, and regard, and wonder marvelously. For I will work a work in your days, which ye will not believe, though it be told you. Now listen up. This is when it starts to get bad. Poor old Habakkuk.
Frank was no stranger to pain. He'd been shot before, even broken a few bones. But the hurt he felt as he slowly became aware of his surroundings made what little breath he had come in short gasps. His head throbbed as if he'd been kicked between the eyes, and his shoulder pounded enough to make his teeth ache.
he willed his eyes open. The dim adobe room fell slowly into focus, and he became aware of two people standing with him. One of them, a woman, brought him a cup of water and helped him drink it. She spoke in soothing tones, and he recognized her voice, but he didn't know how. The cool water chased away some of the pain, and he found enough energy to smile at the woman holding the cup.
I'm obliged.
I won't ask how you feel, boy. You look like hammered shit.
Sam, you mind your language. Can't you see the hand of the Lord at work here?
Frank smiled. It was good to be back among the living, even if the living were prone to an argument now and then. He felt a knot low in his belly and realized he probably hadn't eaten in some time.
Gotta have a little something to eat.
Hallelujah! Glory be to the Lord Almighty! I prayed last night, and God told me if you'd just wake up and eat, you'd be all right. Thank you. Thank you.
She hustled into the other room and came back a moment later with a wooden bowl of soup.
I made you some beef broth. It's been cooking for the last 2 days, so it's pretty rich. Stick to your ribs. Good for you.
She spooned a little into Frank's mouth. He hated being fed, but his own arms felt like lead anchors, and he needed to eat.
You're damn lucky we found that stray steer. I have to eat mutton stew morning, noon, and night. God provides for his own, just like Abraham's ram in the thicket, so he wouldn't have to kill his own son, Isaac.
Don't mind her. She can't talk unless she relates it to the good book.
I'm Abby, and this is my husband Sam, the Gentile infidel. We're the Birkins.
How long have I been out?
Frank found he was full after only a few bites of soup, and he had to fight to keep that down.
Over a week? You sure soaked up a lot of lead. I was sure you was done for. Them outlaws really wanted to see you dead. They would have finished you off for sure if me and some of my infidel friends hadn't ridden up.
The Lord works in mysterious ways.
Dixie.
Sam and Abby looked at each other. Neither spoke.
She's dead, isn't she?
God called her home, son. I'm sorry. We buried her out by Wolf Mesa. It's a pretty spot.
You might like to know we shot two of the buggers that killed her. Wounded another, but he was well enough to hang last Saturday.
You should get a lot more rest. We can talk some more in the morning.
What's your name, boy?
Morgan. Frank Morgan.
Good to meet you, Mr. Morgan.
If Sam recognized the name, he didn't act like it. Frank awoke with a tall blonde man standing over him, holding a hat in his hands. He assumed it was the next morning because he was hungry again.
Well, I'll be damned. I bet money that you wouldn't make it, Morgan.
Glad you lost your bet.
Me too. I'm John Stout, the sheriff of El Paso County. You feel like talking a little, mister?
I could talk. What do you want to know?
You remember much about the attack?
Not much. All happened pretty fast. Was my wife abused, Sheriff?
No. Bergen and his drinking buddies happened on you right after the ambush. But there is something you should know. By the time they got to her, the ring finger on her left hand was gone.
Gone?
They cut it off. Made a trophy of it, I suppose.
Was it Swan?
Looks like it. Before we hung the old boy Sam wounded, he told us as much. All right, Morgan. You had a horse and a dog on that train. I got them both boarded at the livery at the Springs. That Appaloosa is a mighty handsome animal. I could get you a good price for him if you want.
No, I'll keep him, thank you.
Listen to me, Morgan. I hate to be the one to break this to you, but you got shot up pretty bad. You aren't going to be doing much riding again. Hell, I don't know if you're even going to walk without a cane.
I surprised you once, remember? And now I'd be obliged if you'd send my horse and my dog back here. I'll pay you for your trouble.
That's just what I wanted to hear, my friend. You're a fighter. And by the time this is all over, You'll need to be.
You got anything in there about vengeance and such?
Frank sat propped on his pillow against the wall. He had graduated to feeding himself.
Well, we've got the whole book of Judges. There's a heap of the Lord's hand of fury in there. I'll read to you about God's left-handed servant, Ehud, stabbing the wicked king in the guts. Sam likes it when I read that part.
That'll do.
It was nothing short of a miracle he was alive at all. He'd been shot in the shoulder, back, and both legs. One of the bullets had gone through the bicep of his right arm. It had been almost a month since the ambush, and Frank had yet to walk without Abby or Sam's help. They showed him every courtesy and treated him like a son. Sam disappeared to work in his mine every morning. In the evening, he sometimes went to share a drink with friends in nearby Manitou Springs. When Abby wasn't cooking mutton stew, she sat at Frank's side and read to him from the Bible, picking where to start each day by closing her eyes and letting the pages fall open to
whatever place the good Lord directs.
Day by day, Frank could feel himself getting stronger. The need for a reckoning against Swan kept him going, pushed him through his pain. One Sunday, Sam walked in and interrupted Abby's scriptures. She must have been expecting him, because instead of her normal rebuke, his intrusion only drew a soft smile.
I made this for you.
Sam held out a wooden crutch, carved out of peeled cedar and cushioned with a piece of wool.
Me and Abby been talking, and we figured it was time you got up and around. You're welcome to stay with us as long as you need to. We just thought you might want to go on a walk or two, without us tagging along all the time.
Frank took the crutch and scooted to the edge of the bed.
I don't know what to say, Sam. You two have been nicer than a hard man like me deserves.
He pushed up on the wood while the Bergens watched his progress. It took him a few wobbly minutes, but he finally got to his feet. He felt lightheaded as soon as he stood up, but that passed, and he took a tentative step. The crutch fit perfectly, and Sam beamed like a father who'd just given his son a new horse. Frank hobbled around the room. Sweat popped out on his forehead from the exertion. After one round, he collapsed back on the bed and leaned his new gift against the wall next to him.
Thank you, Sam. Thank you both for everything. I'll try a longer gallop tomorrow.
Frank ate mutton stew, listened to Abby read her scripture, and walked a little further every day.